you want to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 4, we'll be spending most, if not all, of our time there this morning. We want to study together this morning on the topic of judging. And of course, there are a lot of things along those lines that people often think of. But this morning we want to look at some things about judging that all begin with the letter P. And we're going to look in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 to find some of those things. The scripture reading that was read from the first two verses, it's interesting. 165 will be the song of invitation.
You want to go ahead and mark that?
You forgot how things worked, huh? <laughs> 165 will be the song of invitation. But the second verse of chapter 4 is used quite often. It says, "Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful." And this verse is often used in reference to people and their money or their time or any number of other things. And that may be accurate because he is making a very broad statement that in anything over which we're stewards, it's required that we be faithful in that thing. But specifically, if we look back to verse 1, we can see what it is that he's talking about. He says in verse 1, "Let a man so account of us." Who's the us there? Well, Paul's talking about himself and the other apostles, possibly even as broadly as Christians as a whole, but I think most likely he's talking here about the apostles and the other preachers and teachers like Barnabas and Timothy, those individuals. He says, "Let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ." And so he points out that as people who are out there preaching and teaching, that they are ministers of Christ. And minister is just a big fancy word for someone who serves, a servant of Christ. That's what the word really means. To minister to someone means to serve them, to help them in some way. And he goes on to say then, "And stewards of the mysteries of God." The mysteries of God. Now, there was a time when those mysteries weren't known. Those mysteries, of course, are those things that regard Christ and the church. God, through prophecy, let a few of those things be known of what was going to come in the new covenant. But it's also said that angels longed to look into these things. They wanted to know what was going to happen. What was God's plan? But God didn't let his plan be fully known to everyone at that time because it wasn't the proper time. But when the time was right, then he sent his son and he revealed his plan for us. And Paul often refers to the gospel and the teachings about the church as a mystery. In order to see that a little more clearly, over in Ephesians chapter 5, he talks about wives and husbands. And he talks about how wives should love their husbands, how husbands should love their wives. But then he explains something about it. Down in verse 32, he says, "This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church." He's making some comparisons there between the physical relationship and emotional and spiritual relationship as well between a husband and wife and that relationship between Christ and the church. But he says it's a great mystery. And it was a great mystery at that time because it was at that time that he was revealing these things. And so he had just begun, as Paul was writing these letters to the churches, as the other apostles were writing down things and the others who were inspired by God to write the New Testament, they were revealing this great mystery, this mystery about Christ and the church. And he says that we, as Christians, specifically the apostles and prophets at that time, were stewards of the mysteries of God. Now, a steward, as you know, is one who is set in charge of some particular thing. A steward may be set over some land, like a caretaker over that land. And he has to give an account to the owner as to how that land was used. He may be a steward over money. Many people who, especially those who have large amounts of money, turn their money over to someone to take care of it and to see that it's invested properly and those kinds of things. Companies, of course, have accountants that keep up with the books and how much is spent and all of those kinds of things. So stewards covers a wide variety of things. Anytime someone is given something that is not theirs for them to take care of, they're in the role of a steward. And so we see then that the apostles were considered stewards of the mysteries of God. The mysteries of God didn't belong to them. It wasn't theirs, but God had set them over these things to teach it, to reveal it, and to show to others how it should be done. And then he says in verse 2, moreover, it is required in stewards, and of course this would apply to any time somebody is a steward, that a man be found faithful. If you set someone up over your money, and you found out that they were stealing your money, and that your checks were bouncing all over town because this person had stolen your money that you set them up as a steward over, that person would soon find themselves unemployed and quite possibly under arrest for the misuse of those things. They have to be found faithful. They have to be found to be doing what is right. Remember the parables Jesus told about the man who went on a journey and he left the talents with his different employees, we might say, his servants. He left five with this one and two with this one and one with another. And he went away, and then when he came back, what did he do? He had them come before him and explain what they had done with those things while he was gone. In another parable, Jesus tells about a man who owned a vineyard and he was letting someone else use that vineyard. Rent it, we might say. But when it came time for them to give him the rent payment, so to speak, they didn't do it. And so he sent his followers, his other servants out there to collect it. Finally, he even sent his own son out to collect it. And they still wouldn't pay. They beat the servants that he sent, the messengers that he sent, even killed his son. Of course, Jesus was talking about himself in that parable. But the fact remains, they were not being faithful with what they had been given. We too, even though we're not apostles, we're not prophets, we don't have those special gifts that they did, we do have the mysteries of God, those that have been revealed. They're right here. And we are now the stewards of those things. The apostles are dead and gone. They can't be the stewards over it any longer. We have to be. And so we have to be found faithful. We have to be faithfully handling the word. There's an old saying. It says, we're told to keep the faith, but not to keep it to ourselves. As stewards over the word of God, over the mysteries that he's revealed in his word, it's our responsibility to get that word out there. To let as many people know the mysteries as possible. And to help them to understand those things that need to be explained to them. Not everything is easily understood. We talked this morning in class about the way of salvation and the plan that God has for someone to become a Christian. And as simple as we might think that would be, just a simple plan for here's what you do to become a Christian, and yet something that simple, the world has distorted and twisted and changed around in so many different ways that it's almost impossible to count the different ways that people say you can be saved. But as stewards over the Word of God and over the mysteries of God, we must be sure that we're handling the Word correctly, and that we're teaching what is true. But now Paul is going to explain some things about the judging process that goes on. He's going to talk about himself, because apparently there were some people judging him. There were certainly some in the church that didn't think he was an apostle. Didn't think he belonged. You remember, shortly after he was converted, when he went back to the disciples, They didn't want to accept him, but Barnabas stood up before them all and said, yes, I know this man's been preaching the gospel. He is changed. He's not that same one that was persecuting the church. But if it hadn't been for Barnabas, the church likely wouldn't have accepted him at all. Barnabas had to stand up for him. And so there were many there at that time, and still, even later on, even after Paul had been preaching and teaching for years, there were still those who thought that he was not a real apostle, that thought that he was not the real thing. Let's look then at verse 3 and what he says there. He says, but with me, it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. And here we come across our first kind of judgment. And it's really a twofold type. There's public and private judgment involved here. There were those who were out there publicly saying that Paul was not doing what he should be doing as a steward of God. They were publicly out there saying that. Then there were also those that were privately judging him and saying and thinking that he wasn't doing what he should do as a minister of God, as a steward of God, that he wasn't being faithful. Well, notice back in verse 2, he said that a man be found faithful. That means there's going to be a judging process that goes on. But Paul says, with me it's a very small thing to be judged by you or by any man's judgment. And he points out something that's very important to us and something that we often have a great deal of difficulty living. And that is that we don't have to answer to man. We don't have to answer to man. Yes, men and women, men, women, human beings, they will judge us. And they may judge us harshly. Sometimes they may judge us correctly. When he says it's a very small thing, it doesn't mean that if someone comes to you and tells you something you're doing wrong, that you just ignore it. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about some unjust judgments that are being made of him. People are saying and thinking things about him that just aren't the case. And he says, that doesn't bother me. He says, it's a small thing, a very small thing. Unfortunately for us, many times what people think about us weighs very heavily on our hearts and on our actions. If we get a reputation perhaps for being very bold to speak about things, people say, well, that person, they're just, you can't talk to them without them bringing up something about the Bible. And they say things like that in our hearing, maybe even say things to us about things like that, and we think, well, maybe I'm pushing these people too, or maybe I'm saying too much, maybe I talk about the Bible too much, maybe I should quit. And we start thinking that we're doing something wrong because these people have judged us about that. Then they say things about, well, you don't go do this and you don't do that, and Christians, y'all just don't have any fun, and there may be any number of ways that they judge us unfairly. As Christians and members of the Lord's church, we may even hear people say, well, y'all down there at that Church of Christ think you're the only ones going to heaven. And y'all are just all stuck up and snobby and all these kinds of things too. We may hear all sorts of judgments against us. If they're true judgments, and if they're righteous judgments, as Jesus tells us in John chapter 5, if those judgments are right, then we need to correct something. Now, if they say something about, well, you know, you're rude to me, well, we need to examine that. Why do they think we're rude? Well, maybe that they think we're rude because we told them the truth. Maybe that we told them the truth in a harsh and unloving way, and we were rude. If so, we need to correct that. But it may be that we, as lovingly as we possibly could, told them the truth, and they were still offended because they were wearing their heart on their sleeve. If that's the case, we just have to let them judge us about those things. Because we have to speak the truth. We have to tell the truth. Now, we do have to obviously know when the right time is. When the right opportunity is. There are certain times when no matter what we say, somebody's not going to listen. They're not going to hear. It's a waste of our time to say certain things at those times. You don't talk to a drunk man about drinking while he's drunk. Doesn't do any good. He's drunk. When he sobers up, he won't even remember the conversation, most likely. And even if he does, he won't think anything of it. The time to talk to a drunk about his drinking is when he's sober, if that case arrives. Sometimes that's not even possible with some. But it doesn't do any good. And there are other times that we have to use good judgment in knowing when to say things and how to say things. Different people are different. Some people can handle something better than others. With some people, we can just be very blunt and very bold and tell them exactly what we think, because that's what they would do to us and that's what they would like for us to do to them. There are other people who are embarrassed very easily, other people who maybe are very tender-hearted, and if we say something harshly or unkindly, or even if we are trying to do it in love, but if we say it too boldly, it may hurt their feelings and keep them from listening to what we're really saying because we've harmed them by the harshness of our words in some way. But that doesn't mean we neglect telling them. We just have to find the proper way to tell them. And of course, we know that there are certain things that must be dealt with publicly and some things that must be dealt with privately. We must never make a private situation into a public display. Never confront someone about their private sin in a public gathering. It's not appropriate, and it certainly will make that person feel badly toward you and toward the Bible as well if that individual thinks that that's the way the Bible teaches us to handle these things. But notice what Paul says. With me it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or man's judgment. You see, there are a lot of things about men when they judge that aren't right. People often judge without knowing the facts. They judge by appearances. People often judge your thoughts and your motives based on their own thoughts and motives. A person sees me and Piggly Wiggly walking down the aisle where the beer is. And because they go to Piggly Wiggly and buy their beer, they think that's what I'm there for. When I'm just walking down the aisle. I have to go down that aisle. There's lots of other things on that aisle. There's all sorts of things on that aisle. There's fruits and vegetables on that aisle. There's ketchup and mayonnaise. All kinds of things on that same aisle with the beer. But because of the thoughts and intents of their heart, they make that judgment about me. And so we know that that's going to happen. We have to just let those things go. It's not an easy thing, though. Because we want people to have a good impression of us. And we often say, oh, avoid the very appearance of evil. And certainly that's true. But when someone has a mind like many have, it doesn't matter how innocent the activity you're involved in, they'll find something evil to think about it. And we have to watch out for those things. But we also have to realize that it should be a small thing to us if they judge us unjustly on those things. Now, it may be the case that we have to stand and defend ourselves, as Paul did here. He said, it's a very small thing that I am judged by you or by any man's judgment. But at the same time he said that, he's still fixing to make his case. He's not just letting the judgment go uncountered. You know, somebody drags you to the court, has you arrested for something. And you say, well, I'm innocent, so it's no big deal to me that you did this to me. Does that mean you're not going to show up in court and proclaim your side, proclaim what the actual facts of the case are? Of course you will. Somebody has you arrested unjustly. You're going to tell your side of the story. You're going to tell the judge and the jury, here's the truth of the matter. And that's what Paul does here too. He said, it's a small thing that I'm judged of you. But at the same time, he's going to make his case. So there's public judgment. There are those who will stand out in public, print it in the newspaper, yell it over the radios, whatever they can about Christians and about the church and about you in particular, perhaps. That should be a very small thing to us. But at the same time, we still have to deal with it. Then on the other hand, there are those who will privately have unjust judgments toward us. And that too has to be a small thing for us. But then he goes on to explain a little more about judgment. The second half of verse 3, after he talks about being judged by man's judgment, he says, "Yea, I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing of myself, yet am I not thereby justified." Now, Paul's not saying that we shouldn't judge ourselves, that we shouldn't look at our lives and examine our lives to make sure that we're doing what's right. Far to the contrary. He, in fact, in other places, has certainly said that we need to examine ourselves to make sure whether we're, he talks about in, later on in 1 Corinthians 11 concerning the Lord's Supper, that as we take the Lord's Supper, we need to examine ourselves to make sure that we're worthy and that we're partaking of it in a worthy manner. There are other places where he talks about us looking back over our lives, circumspectly, he says, and other things of that nature. So what does he mean when he says, I judge not mine own self? Well, what he's talking about here is, in this case that these people have judged him, he's not judging himself. And here's the reason. He says, "For I know nothing of myself." He says, "I'm not judging myself on this particular issue because as far as I know, there's nothing to judge." Wouldn't it be nice if we could all say that? Wouldn't it be nice if we could all be able to say, as Paul does, "I'm not judging myself on this particular issue because I don't know of anything I've done wrong in this." As being a steward of God, Paul is able to say, "I don't know of anything that I have done that is wrong." This is called personal judgment here. Personal judgment. We've seen public and private judgment. Now we're dealing with personal judgment. If we have done something wrong, then certainly we have to judge ourselves. We have to examine ourselves, and we have to, of course, make that right. Jesus tells us in the book of Matthew on the Sermon on the Mount that when he deals with judging others in chapter 7, he talks to us about why are we looking at the mote that is in our brother's eye and not even considering the beam, this big log that's sticking in our own eye. And he says in verse 5 of Matthew 7, "You hypocrite, first take the beam out of your own eye, and then shalt thou see more clearly to take out the mote of thy brother's eye." And he points out two things along these lines. First of all, make sure you get your life right. That's apparently what Paul has done. Because Paul is able to say, as far as I know, there's no sin in my life. As far as I know, I'm doing everything that I should be doing. I doubt that there's anyone in here today that could say that. I know I can't. I know I can't stand here before you today and say, when I examine my life, I know that I've not done anything that I shouldn't do. I know that I've done everything that I should do. I can't say that. And I doubt that you can too. Not if we're honest with ourselves. But when it comes to maybe another area, if we look at individual areas, if somebody asks me about my faithfulness to my wife, I have been faithful to my wife. As far as I know, and I think I know everything there is to be known on that particular subject, I haven't done anything wrong in that area. I haven't cheated on her. I haven't abandoned her. I haven't been unfaithful to her in any way. And Paul makes that statement that he knows as a steward of the mysteries of God, he doesn't know of anything, any way, any time where he has betrayed that trust, where he has been an unfaithful steward. Now in other areas, we may be able to say that, but in some areas we may not be able to say that. We say, what about, have we thought about anything that we shouldn't have thought about? Well, we have, yeah, I do sometimes. I have. Have we done everything we can, taken every opportunity to share the gospel with somebody? Many times we have to say no. I had an opportunity the other day to talk to somebody about the gospel and I didn't do it. But Paul was able to say, I don't know of anything. Now let's notice then what he says at the end of that, in the middle of verse number 4. After he says, I know nothing of myself. He says, yet, or but, I am not hereby justified. See, there's something about private judgment. Just like public judgment, and rather here's something about personal judgment. Just like public judgment from others and private judgment from others, man's judgment, people's judgment, our personal judgment may be askew. It may be unclear. It may be wrong. We may judge ourselves to be pure, to be clean, to be righteous for a couple of reasons that may be wrong. One, we may not know all of the facts. That's highly unlikely. Most of the time when we do something, we know what we've done. Very few of us actually have amnesia of that sort, but it's within the realm of possibility that we have forgotten or did not even know something that we did. Another possibility is that perhaps we do not know that what we did was wrong. See, Paul leaves that possibility open. He says, I don't judge myself because I don't know of anything I've done wrong. But he said, I'm not justified by that because for all he knows, there's something that he did that he didn't know about. That, of course, is why we have to keep studying and continue learning as Christians, because there may be something that we're doing that's sinful that we don't know about because we haven't studied enough to learn it. A person may go around getting drunk and not knowing that drunkenness is a sin. You might say, well, how on earth could they do that? Everybody knows drunkenness is a sin. Somebody may not know that. They may never have been taught that. They may never have studied the Bible on their own to find that out. And so they just don't know that that's a sin. That doesn't keep it from being a sin, and they're not justified by the fact that they don't know that. But they might judge themselves and say, hey, I'm all right. I'm righteous. I'm doing good. Even though they have this sin in their life because they don't know. The other possibility as well, the third possibility is, we may be deluding ourselves. Our judgment may be biased because we don't want to have to condemn ourselves. And so we refuse to admit or refuse to acknowledge that something we're doing is wrong. Even though we know we've done it and we know it's wrong, we refuse to admit it. We refuse to acknowledge that it's wrong, and we refuse even sometimes to acknowledge that we did it. Little children do this sometimes. I know from substituting with the second graders and third graders, sometimes you'll catch them doing something and you'll say, why are you doing this? And I wasn't doing that. I saw you. No, you didn't. See, they're deluding themselves. They think that they can, and we think sometimes that if nobody saw us do it, we didn't do it. It doesn't work that way. Whether anyone else saw us or not, whether we want to believe we did it or not, if we did it, we did it. And we have to be judged on that basis. But Paul says that as far as he knows, there is nothing that he has done that he shouldn't have done. There's nothing that he should have done that he left undone. But he says, that doesn't justify me. And he explains why, and we come to the final judgment. He says, in the last part of verse 4, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Now he's not saying that if other people point out something that we're doing wrong, that we shouldn't correct it. He's not saying that if we realize we're doing something wrong, we shouldn't correct it. That's not what he's saying at all. What he's saying is, the final decision, the final judgment, the perfect judgment comes from God. So we've seen public judgment, private judgment, personal judgment, and now perfect judgment. So because God is perfect, only He can judge perfectly. We, as hard as we may try, will judge imperfectly when we judge others. That's why Jesus says in Matthew 7 that we need to think about that judging that we do. He says in Matthew 7 and verse 1, "Judge not that ye be not judged, because with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged." That's why we try to use only the Bible when we make those judgments. When we see these things, we're using not our own judgment, we try to use the Word of God, because it's a perfect guide. Many times people will say, "Well, who are you to judge me? I'm nobody to judge you. I can't judge you. But I tell you what I can do. When I see something in your life that doesn't match up with what God says, I can tell you about His judgment." See, that's what we really are as Christians. We're not judging people. We're simply telling them the judgment that's been made. I think about a man who's been arrested for murder, perhaps. And he goes before the judge and the jury and he's convicted. And perhaps even they had overwhelming evidence. Even maybe had a videotape that actually showed him committing the crime. And if I come to him and say to this man, "You are a murderer," have I judged him? No. I'm simply telling him the judgment that's already been made. The judgment was made by the judge and the jury. It wasn't made by me. I'm simply telling him, "Look, you were judged to be a murderer." We can do that as Christians. We have to do that as Christians. Let's look back to Matthew 7 again for just a moment. We read in verse 5 where he says, "You hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of your own eye." Notice what he says in the second half of that verse. "Then you shall see clearly to cast out the mote out of your brother's eye." You see, God never tells us, and Jesus never tells us, to leave sin in somebody else's life. He tells us we need to get ourselves right first, and then work on them. I've seen a few occasions of this, and it always strikes me as very, very odd. Where two individuals, neither of whom are Christians, and one telling the other, "You ought to be a Christian," and they're not a Christian. How hypocritical does that sound? How foolish does that sound? "You're not a Christian. Why are you telling me I should be a Christian?" "Well, I'm too old to change now, honey, but you need to be a Christian." Why do people think that way? And of course, that's another reason that Paul might think that the judgment of men is a small thing. Who is, for someone who is not even a Christian, to judge a Christian? Oh, they have no place. They have so many things wrong in their own life that they have no room to judge someone who is a Christian. But he says, "He that judgeth me is the Lord." The Lord will judge. It could have been that some of the Christians at that time were judging Paul because he took the gospel to the Gentiles. Some of the Jewish Christians may have been upset at him about that. It may have been that they were upset at him at some way that he lived his life. You know, Paul said, "To the Jews I am become a Jew. To the Greeks and to the Gentiles I am become a Gentile." He said, "I am become all things to all men." And there may have been some who had trouble handling that and thought he was doing wrong and sinning by doing these things. When he ate that meat that was considered by the Jews to be unclean and he sat with the Gentiles and ate that meat, they might have judged him harshly. On the other hand, when the Gentiles saw him doing something that had been a Jewish tradition, keeping the Passover perhaps, they might have judged him and said he was doing wrong by doing that. But he knew that he was doing all of these things pleasing to God. And he knew that Jesus, the Lord, God, was the one who was going to judge him in the last day. He says in verse 5, "Therefore, judge nothing before the time, until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts. And then shall every man have praise of God." So it points out to us some things that are going to happen when the Lord comes and judges us. He says the hidden things of darkness are going to be brought to light. You see, as human beings, we don't know what things people have done hidden. I may think that you are an excellent Christian. I may think you're a pillar in the church, a strong, deeply rooted tree in God's forest. But I may be dead wrong. You may have hatred and envy and lust and all manners of uncleanness in your heart. You may even be involved in embezzlement from the company you work for. You may even have committed murders that I don't know about. I may be way off the mark. But you see, when the Lord comes, He will bring to light the hidden things of darkness. And will make manifest the counsels of the heart. He'll know whether we did the things that we did for the praise of men or to please Him. He'll know if we went out for the glory, for the money, for the fame, for whatever else, for some selfish reason. He'll know when we're here together partaking of the Lord's Supper whether our mind truly was on that. When we come together to worship, He'll know whether our mind's truly on that worship or whether we're just going through actions and our heart's not in it at all. Those hidden counsels of the heart, He will make them manifest. And then, everyone, He says, shall have praise of God. That is, those, of course, who have done right. The others, of course, won't. But He says, don't judge on that basis before the time. Now certainly we can still examine fruit, and we can still teach and preach. I'm doing that today. I'm warning even about some of these things that we need to do and that we need other things that we need to avoid. Doesn't mean that we don't examine fruit, that we don't warn people of sin, that we don't, even when we see sin, point it out to them. But what Paul does mean is that there are some things that we can't see. We need not make those final judgments about people before the time. We may be wrong. If I say, so-and-so's going to make it to heaven, and so-and-so's not, I don't know that. I don't know what's in those two individuals' hearts. The one that I say, oh, that person's on the way to heaven, they're going to heaven, they may have all kinds of sin in their heart. They may have absolutely the wrong attitude about being a Christian. The other person may be struggling with all kinds of sin, and sins that I can see. Maybe struggling with alcohol or drugs or sexual sins or any number of other things that they may be struggling with and falling. But their heart may be right, just like David's heart was right. David committed a lot of sins. In the Old Testament, King David, he committed a lot of sins. But the Bible says that he was a man after God's own heart. And I dare say that David will be in heaven. How could a man who is a man after God's own heart not be? On the other hand, some other king who maybe did all the right things, but didn't have their heart in it. How could they have been right? There are so many things that we just don't know. We look at actions. We look at Judas and Peter. Judas betrayed the Lord. Peter denied the Lord. Peter denied him 3 times. Judas only betrayed him 1 time. So if we start counting up sins, Peter's got 3 and Judas has 1. And then we say, well, I know, but you know, betraying him is worse than denying him. I don't know whether Jesus would have seen it that way or not. But the real difference in that situation isn't the sin that was committed. The real difference was the response after that sin was acknowledged. Judas went out and committed another sin. He committed suicide. He hanged himself. Peter, on the other hand, wept bitterly. He showed true godly sorrow. We need to think about these kinds of things when we think about this judgment. We can't always know someone else's heart, someone else's mind. And we know that they can't always know ours. And in a lot of ways, it all comes back to what Jesus said that we should do unto others as we would have them do unto us. I don't want you to judge me harshly and unjustly without knowing all the facts. I want you to give me the benefit of the doubt, so to speak. And if I want you to treat me that way, then I should treat you that way as well. We know that we all are going to sin. We all are going to fall short as stewards of God's message and of God's will. But notice verse 2 doesn't say that it is required in stewards that a man be found perfect. It says it is required that he be found faithful. We can be faithful even though at times we make mistakes. I dare say no steward in the world who's given, whether it be a land or household to run or a business to run or the financial makings of a nation to run, none of them's ever performed that task perfectly. In the parable of the talents that Jesus tells, the man who had 5 talents brought back 5 more. He had doubled it. That doesn't mean he did it perfectly. He might could have brought back 15. We don't know. The man who had 2 brought back 2. He might could have brought back 6 or 8. We don't know. But we know they were faithful. They did well. May not have done perfectly, but they did well. The other man, though, who brought back the 1 talent that he had to start with, he was told by the king, even what you have is going to be taken away from you. Take it and give it to the man who has 10. We need to think about these things. We need to remember always that the one who will judge us is the Lord. And because of that, we need not put too much stock in our personal judgment of ourselves. We need not put too much stock in the private judgment of another individual, or even of the public judgment of the people around us. Doesn't mean that we ignore completely those things that may come to light. But we must always remember, as a steward, we must be found faithful before God.